Welcome to Dead Souls Social Club.
This audio presentation contains graphic details of death, violence, and controversial subject matter. Listener discretion is strongly advised. From EMG Media, this is The Truth About UPF. I'm Jimmy Black, a researcher and psychologist, and I'll be your host for tonight. Did you know that you were being manipulated psychologically? Every single day of your life. Large corporations, media outlets, and politicians manipulate us all, sure. Whether you consider yourself resistant to it or accept that fact. For a large part, many of us are aware of how we are regularly manipulated, yet do little to resist it or try and change it. Ignorance is a small risk or byproduct of being content for the most part, and corporations and governments both know and rely on this fact. How symbiont of us all. But I'm not here to talk about power-hungry governments or evil media conglomerates. No, not tonight. Tonight I'm focusing on corporations and, in particular, food production corporations. Big food, if you will. And how, for the most part, calling what these corporations produce food is actually quite a stretch. Because, well, Big Food is majorly responsible for the UPF output across the globe. Ultra-processed food. You ever wonder why you can't stop eating ultra-processed food? Because you really can't. Well, we'll touch on that too.
In today's Health Watch, new research is linking ultra-processed foods to higher risks of obesity, diabetes, heart disease, even early death.
Even if they want to cut down, even if they know it's killing them, they find they can't stop.
My name's Chris Van Tulliken. I'm an NHS doctor, I'm a scientist, and I'm part of a growing group of doctors and academics who are increasingly worried about the effect that the global food system is having on all of us.
Many countries have already created new dietary guidelines that advise against consuming ultra-processed foods.
About half of what Canadians eat is ultra-processed food, a category under increased scrutiny. This month, a group of researchers wrote a series for The Lancet outlining the dangers and what to do about them.
Ultra-processed foods provide American families on a budget with convenient, affordable groceries. But some have been linked to growing rates of disease. As food technology develops at lightning speed, Americans have to make choices that may risk their health.
How is it that some chemicals that are in our foods have long been banned elsewhere?
Did you know that obesity in the West is for the first time in more than 10 years actually decreasing? Yep, the numbers are going down. And that's because 1 in 8 American adults are now being treated with a weight loss drug. But it's not just the United States. 1.7 million adults in the UK are regularly injecting GLP-1 receptor medication. That statistic is 1 in 12 Canadians, 2% of Australians, 8% of Germans, 2% of Norwegians, and nearly 5% of Italians. Restaurants are actually launching Ozempic menus with half-size portions. The world has gone Mounjaro crazy. It's a method to get slim, without the effort, as it were. If you can afford it, that is. The food industry has spent more than a century engineering food so that you can't stop eating. And they're not about to let all that hard work go to waste. Sounds like a juicy conspiracy, right? Well, it's not a conspiracy. It's true. Cold, hard fact. The hard truth, my brothers and sisters. Honestly. This world, man. We are being manipulated, left, right, and center. In fact, did you know the food industry has begun using AI to create algorithms that design the exact flavor profile that your brain is least able to resist? Actual publicly revealed research data has shown this. Now bear in mind that large corporations aren't public bodies, They are under no legal obligation to release their research or internal communications. Which means that if this is the stuff they don't mind us knowing about, what the hell are they keeping secret from us? Now, before we go any further, a disclaimer. People generally get defensive, angry, and don't really like it when you talk about the food they eat and their consumption choices. So I want to be clear. I'm not a vegan. I'm not a vegetarian. I'm not a bodybuilder, fitness fanatic, or part of any other food agenda. I'm just here to talk about conspiracies and true crime, man. I'm as neutral as spring water. Anyway, more than 70% of the American food supply is now ultra-processed. The UK is also one of the highest consumers of UPFs in Europe, second only to the United States in global rankings. It's now getting extremely difficult to go to a grocery store and not end up with some kind of chemical-riddled UPF in your basket. For clarity, ultra-processed foods, or UPFs, are industrially formulated products made mostly from extracted substances like sugars, oils, and starches, plus an array of additives. They are stripped of natural fiber and nutrients and are specifically engineered to be highly profitable, hyper-palatable, and convenient. They often contain ingredients that you wouldn't typically use in home cooking. Products such as mass-produced and packaged pies, pizzas, ready meals and frozen dinners, crisps or potato chips, biscuits, packaged cakes and sweets, all carbonated fizzy drinks and fruit-flavored yogurts, bacon, sausages and hot dogs, and of course mass-produced packaged bread and breakfast cereals. Generally, any packaged food with five or more ingredients is a UPF, especially those containing industrial additives like preservatives, emulsifiers, sweeteners, and artificial colours. The vast majority of us have at least one of the above in our kitchen cupboards right now. They have taken over the supermarket, often now using protein labels and healthy-looking packaging as a Trojan horse to lure healthy trend watchers in, all the while meticulously engineering their products to be as addictive as possible. Have you tried, quote, protein Doritos? Tasty. But my biggest weakness will always be the Pringle. If they're in the house, I can quite literally inhale the whole tube, only to sit there afterwards, feeling guilty, questioning my life choices, all despite barely feeling like I've eaten anything, which is strange, right? Have you ever eaten a McDonald's meal or a Burger King, a giant burger, large fries, full fat shake, and still feel hungry afterwards? Well, the plain old potato is one of the most filling foods on earth. In studies measuring satiety per calorie, the boiled potato wins by a landslide. Nothing else comes close. So how did one of the most filling foods on earth become one of the most easiest to overconsume? Well, that's where ultra-processed food comes in, along with a rising protein trend and increasing advances in food engineering. So this story is more important than ever. But to explain it, we need to go back to two famous brothers who couldn't agree on a single question. That question being, should food be pleasurable? In the 1890s, Dr. John Harvey Kellogg ran a health resort in Michigan, United States. He believed bland food preserved moral purity. Too much flavor overstimulated the nervous system, so he invented cornflakes, which were intentionally tasteless. He claimed that eating cornflakes would stop men masturbating. But his brother William watched patients suffer through them and saw something that John couldn't. People actually needed to want to eat them. So Will added sugar. John was horrified. The brothers fell out for decades, but it was Will's version that won over the public. He launched the Kellogg's Company in 1906, and sugar-sweetened cornflakes became one of the best-selling breakfast foods in the United States for the next five decades. It triggered companies to compete as to who could make the tastiest, most convenient, and most affordable foods. Look at Spam, for example, sitting there in all its glory. Nobody chooses Spam because it tastes better than fresh meat. I mean, look again. It looks like a square asshole. But people choose it because it lasted for years amid a great period of rationing. However, by the 1950s, food wasn't scarce anymore. There were a lot more options. So the challenge to the food corporations shifted from making food available to making it irresistible. So, let's pump food with chemicals more addictive than heroin. And to do this, there was no better snack than the potato chip. Their invention was almost an accident in actuality. In 1953, a frustrated chef named George Crumb, no pun intended, was handed back a plate of fried potatoes by a customer for being too thick and too soggy. Sarcastically, Crumb sliced the potatoes as thin as he possibly could, fried them until they were ultra crispy, and doused them in salt. The customer actually loved them, and so did many, many others. And thus, crisps, or the potato chip, were born. Nobody makes homemade crisps. It's too much hassle for too little gain. But what if there was a convenience added to the mix? For decades after Crumb's invention, crisps were fragile restaurant luxuries. But that was until Herman Lee figured out packaging that would retain their freshness. And suddenly they could travel, which was perfect timing, as families were becoming less busier and supermarkets were popping up and replacing corner shops. Convenience was becoming king, and it shifted from a novelty to somewhat of a necessity. In 1961, Lay's company merged with the Frito company to become Frito-Lay, and suddenly there were chips in every aisle of every shop around the world. Around the same time, a Mexican restaurant in Disneyland started cutting up their leftover tortillas, frying them, and selling them as a quick snack to park guests. They called them Doritos, from the Spanish Doradito, meaning little golden things. That's right, Doritos were invented by Disney. Meanwhile, Procter & Gamble was watching all of this play out. So they hired a chemist to build a superior chip from scratch. That chemist pressed reconstituted rice starch into a perfect saddle shape that stacked without breaking, added a small sprinkle of potato dough and a mix of salt and preservatives. They called them, quote, Mr. Pringle's newfangled potato chips, until they realized that sounded kind of stupid and a bit of a mouthful. Oh, by the way, you didn't think Pringles were actually sliced potato, did you? There's actually very little potato in a Pringle. I really don't want to ruin that illusion for you if I did. So Mr. Pringle's newfangled potato chips was dropped as a product name, which left them with the title of simply Pringles, which was what they had been called by most of the population anyway. There were lots of crisps competing with each other in supermarkets at this time, and every company was seeking an edge over all the others. So they stopped hiring chefs to work on their formulas and started hiring psychologists and scientists instead. Food corporations understood what tasted good, but they also now understood why humans couldn't stop indulging. And what they found would change everything. You see, your body, my body, all of us, we all run on ancient hunger software, to put it simplistically. So let's talk about that. Let's talk about the so-called bliss point. When your energy drops, your hunger hormones rise. When you've had enough food to fill you and satisfy your hunger, your fullness hormones rise, and thus you stop eating. This is how hunger works in a very basic and simplistic explanation. Ghrelin is a peptide hormone often referred to as the hunger hormone. It's produced in the stomach to signal the brain, specifically the hypothalamus, to tell it that it's time to eat. Now that system has essentially evolved over millions of years, and for most of human history it worked because whole foods typically contained fiber, water, and had a structure that requires chewing and digestion. Leptin, another peptide hormone produced by your adipose tissue, or fat cells, acts as a key regulator of your body's energy balance, appetite, and metabolism. It's commonly known as a satiety hormone, and it travels to the brain to signal that energy reserves are sufficient, thus reducing hunger and stimulating energy expenditure. So, by the time you've eaten enough calories from a boiled potato, for example, your body already knows it. But what if you could deliver those calories before these signals had time to trigger? That was the question that Howard Moskowitz, the market researcher and psychotherapist, set out to answer. Moskowitz was a Harvard-trained taste researcher. And in his own words, he said, quote,
I started having meetings with product developers such as PepsiCo, Kraft and Campbell's, and they told me if you could do this with a bunch of different ingredients simultaneously, then maybe there's a bliss point that's really loved. Well, I did it. And by golly, there was.
This so-called bliss point is a precise combination of ingredients that makes foods irresistible. It has three key pillars. Salt came first, as it improves taste while suppressing bitterness and amplifying flavor. It also covers up any chemical aftertastes. Fat was the second, because it carried flavor while creating a rich mouthfeel. But more importantly, fat makes flavor linger. Each bite feels slightly more rewarding than the last. It pulls you forward. Finally, sugar completed the triangle. It makes food addictive and ensures that you keep coming back for more and more. These were the three key pillars. In crisps, for example, this comes mostly from the starch in the potato, which converts rapidly to glucose. If you get all three ratios right simultaneously, you get what researchers call, quote, hyperpalatable food. These are effectively combinations of salt, fat, and sugar that are never found occurring naturally together in nature. But food scientists also discovered a sneakier trick, that of vanishing calorie density. So let's take a look at the humble Cheeto, for example. I love Cheetos. Wotsits too. They are both produced by PepsiCo. Their cheesiness never fails to hit the spot. Anyway, both of these items start life as cornstarch slurry. It's then processed into a paste and puffed up with air. It requires barely any chewing to eat. It dissolves before your stomach even registers that it's present, which makes it incredibly difficult to eat just one. This is also partially why some fast food restaurants inject their chicken with marinade through hundreds of needles. It makes the chicken much quicker to break down and digest. As Sandy Lamotte, a food researcher, identified in a CNN article she wrote in January 2024, fast food has essentially been pre-chewed and already digested and then restructured. Elizabeth Dunford, a professor of nutrition at the University of North Carolina, likened fast food products to, quote, adult baby food. In her recent study, she highlighted that a significant portion of commercial baby food shares the same characteristics as junk fast food, which also leads to concerns that infants are being conditioned to prefer unhealthy ultra-processed foods from a very young age. Now, this is a fun fact. Did you know that even the sound of some foods are engineered? The specific pop of a Pringles can was carefully designed in the early 1990s to signal freshness and create a ritualistic moment that primes you to start eating before the lid is fully off. Because, as you know, once you pop, you can't stop. And of course, this is all to service the same goal: to make the most craved foods possible. And looking at the steady rising calories the average American consumes, it worked. But researchers started linking ultra-processed foods to something they call conditioned hypereating, which is a learned drive to keep consuming highly rewarding food well beyond your actual energy needs and hunger point. You have almost certainly experienced this. I know I have. You know, it's much harder to avoid over-consuming calories today than it was 50 years ago. And that's purely because of choice and the products that are available to us to consume. When the CEOs of the world's largest food companies caught wind of this, they all gathered privately to have a meeting to discuss. Now, this sounds like some secret cabal or conspiratorial organization. But there's actually evidence of it. We know what happened in this meeting because an investigative journalist named Michael Moss tracked down the people who were in the room on that day. One of the CEOs stood up and gave a presentation on the rising obesity rates. Ultra-processed food was everywhere, their research and data showed, and their products were a significant part of the obesity problem, especially in children. But they couldn't voluntarily make their products less craveable, because their competitors wouldn't, so thus they'd lose market share, and the obesity numbers wouldn't budge anyway. Or at least that was their outcome and opinion. Money over morals, right? So nothing really changed. Why would it? There's no food regulation, at least not in regard to sales and product. You know, when companies did try to shift, the market actually punished them. In the 1980s, Cheez-It released a low-salt version of their product, but consumers who were already used to the original flavor barely purchased it, and the product was taken off the shelves and discontinued. In 2010, PepsiCo's CEO tried to reposition the company around healthier products following what he perceived as a growing public shift towards healthier lifestyles. But Wall Street pushed back, so to speak. Their stock dropped. You see, historically, when companies have made their products less rewarding, they've often been punished by the market. This has happened on countless occasions over the last 80 years. So, whilst it is easy to say that the corporations are evil and manipulative, it's also what the people want. Although, and this is a big although, the people want the ultra-processed, unhealthy, sugary crap because they've been preconditioned to want it down to a core chemical and psychological level by, those same corporations. And this is why, inside these companies, executives talk about, quote, share of the stomach and frequency of use. These describe their ideal customers as heavy users. Nutrition barely, if ever, enters the conversation, however. Coca-Cola's internal documents, dated from February 1997, identified water as their primary competitor, more so than any other beverage. Gatorade recorded something similar shortly after, as did PepsiCo in 2001 and Britvic in 2005. So these soft drink companies actually see it as their mission to get people to drink their product more than natural water. Public statements matter less than purchasing data, because companies don't optimize for what people say they want. They optimize for what people actually purchase. In 1977, the Swiss global food corporation Nestlé came under heavy fire after it was discovered that it was aggressively promoting their breast milk substitute formula over the real thing in third world and developing countries. They marketed the formula as significantly better than actual breast milk, and relied on the lack of education in these countries to convince the market. Obviously, the synthetic formula was nowhere near as good as the real thing. In 2007, groups including the International Baby Food Action Network and Save the Children issued reports that the promotion of infant formula over breastfeeding led to health problems and deaths among infants in these countries. Around 74% of the US food supply is considered ultra-processed food. 57% of the British food supply. 62% of the Canadian food supply and 57% of the Australian food supply. That means that most of the food available for your consumption is harmful to your health. Yes, this has led to obesity in the population of these countries. Yes, it has significantly increased heart disease and cancers. Yes, it has caused premature deaths. There is no denying any of these facts. If you were to put your hand in a fire, you would get burned. The reaction and outcome would be instantaneous, and you would be sure not to repeat the action. But with ultra-processed food, the damage is creeping and occurs slowly over time. Corporations know this and rely on that fact to know that you won't take action against them or stop buying their products. Plausible deniability. You don't see the damage being done to your body and health in real time. When health conditions eventually do emerge, you don't link them to past consumption of harmful chemicals and additives. You simply don't link the food that you've consumed over your lifespan to your health issues. Rinse and repeat. Over 72% of American adults are overweight or obese. 59% of Brits, 65% of Canadians, and 66% of Australians. The children they were warned about in the meeting I spoke about earlier are now the adults in the room with diet-related disease. It's a simple, cold, hard fact that the Western diet is harmful to your health over time. The same quote-unquote tricks get applied to products which are marketed as healthy. Remember the low-fat craze of the 1990s? Well, this is the clearest example of this. Companies like Snackwells and Weight Watchers pulled out the fat from their food and replaced it with sugar. But people just ate more because it felt healthy to them, only to end up gaining more weight. It became known as the Snackwell effect. They were snacking on increased sugar. Overconsumption of sugar is worse for your health than a high-fat diet. Go figure. As a result of the surge in ultra-processed foods, we now have what are known as food swamps. These are neighborhoods where fast food chains and dollar, pound, or bargain stores flood the area, and they're almost exclusively stocked up with ultra-processed foods. It's no surprise that these are majority in low-income areas. Similarly, food deserts exist, where there just aren't as much affordable fresh foods, if any. Approximately 39.5 million people in the United States don't have access to fresh or affordable healthy food. That's 12% of the United States population. So, are we all just doomed to the consequences of our ultra-processed environment? Well, not exactly. Although banning ultra-processed food probably isn't very realistic. Also, people lead busy lives and they want convenience. Most people will argue that risking their health here and there is okay and worth the convenience of fast food. Initially, ultra-processed foods were invented for valid reasons, such as for soldiers in trenches, or for families without the time or money to cook from scratch. These foods solved genuine problems. Pasteurization, for example, stops people dying violently from tuberculosis, and fortifying food with vitamins helps prevent deficiencies and diseases, which is why, as great as it can be, companies going back to minimal ingredients is not necessarily always better. Processing foods in itself isn't the enemy. The problem is hyper-optimization for craveability and marketability over satiety. That gap between processed and engineered to bypass your hunger signals is where the damage happens. So you don't have to make an irrational jump from a diet of drive-throughs to eating raw, untreated meat just because a shirtless influencer told you to on TikTok. On a personal level, historically, I've always loved food, but I've always managed it by being active. But when the COVID lockdown occurred in 2021, I spent the best part of a year at home, and my activities significantly decreased. I put on weight, and it became difficult to shift. I drew the line at the end of 2023 and reinvented my diet and started a regular exercise plan. I cut out all ultra-processed foods, cut sugar out of my diet completely, reduced salt, and ate more whole foods. I lost 7 stone, or 98 pounds, in 6 months, and I've maintained it for almost 2 years now. I won't say it was easy, but the most difficult part was cutting out sugar and the ultra-processed food, mainly due to the additives and chemicals which are so addictive that cutting these out meant I went through a series of withdrawals. It was like withdrawing from drugs, particularly heroin or opiates. That sounds far-fetched, but it's true. Muscle aches, flu symptoms, sweating, diarrhea, vomiting, nausea, insomnia, restlessness, anxiety, random hot and cold flushes, and my mood plummeted. For around a week it was savage, but it was ultimately worth it. Following the withdrawal, I came out of the other side cognitively more clear. I processed things quicker, slept better, and generally felt a lot more healthy. The difference was significantly noticeable, like night and day. And it made me realize what was in the food that I ate and sugar that I consumed. Practically speaking, the most effective way to get and stay in better condition is to redesign your environment, not your willpower. You do not rise to the level of your goals, you fall to the level of your systems. You want to make the hyperpalatable stuff slightly harder to reach, and whole foods slightly easier. Small environmental changes can allow you to channel your willpower more effectively. Use foods that increase satiety, because not all calories affect hunger equally. Food high in protein, fiber, and water keep you fuller for longer. Ironically, some modern products like high-protein yogurts or the occasional diet sodas can actually help make whole foods more rewarding. The same principles that make junk food irresistible, salt, fat, sugar, umami, and texture, can work just as well on whole foods. If you combine them with tricks that make your meals more filling, it makes fat loss or weight maintenance a lot easier, and you'll naturally gravitate to more whole foods. There's a common myth that synthetic sweeteners are worse for your health than refined sugar. That is actually not true. Yes, they both come with risks, but the risk from synthetic sweeteners are far lower. So if sweet treats are your downfall, replace them with artificially sweeteners items at first. Baby steps. Also, low fat is a myth. Don't buy into it. You could also try making healthier versions of the foods that you crave. Big Macs, crunch wraps, and curries, it's entirely possible to make healthy versions of all of these that mimic the taste, but are far better for your health than the UPF model. It's about finding meals that you can actually enjoy and stick to. Meals that you are happy to make that fit into your schedule. Diets fail due to craving, where people have cut out too much too quickly, but also due to the impact on their lifestyle. Overeating ultra-processed foods isn't random. It's a predictable outcome of decades of optimization pointed directly at your brain by corporations that have spent millions of pounds or dollars researching the best way to manipulate their customers. That's you. But once you see the system, you can stop losing to it. Take back choice and your own free will. Just keep in mind that food corporations don't research and produce food that's healthy or tasty. Their main goal, like all corporations, is to make money and keep generating higher and higher profits. So to do this, they research addictiveness and repeat business. And if it means adding harmful chemicals and processes to their products, then so be it. That's the conspiracy. That these chemicals and processes are deemed safe for human consumption by the FDA or the British FSA. But here's the rub. They are safe to consume. But no, not one person, company or organization has ever researched if these chemicals and processes are safe for continual, long-term human consumption. Cancer rates in all Western countries are increasing. Heart disease in all Western countries are increasing. Metabolic disorders such as diabetes, mental health issues, cognitive decline such as from dementia and Alzheimer's disease, IBS and strokes are all increasing in Western countries, official statistics show. All of these are directly proven to be linked to UPFs. We are all eating ourselves to death for profit, enjoying it, and begging for more, thanking the food corporations. And we have been chemically and cognitively engineered that way since birth. Good night, everyone.